Welcome to the Strategy Driven Podcast, The Cost of Not Engaging Employees. On behalf of the entire Strategy Driven team, I would like to welcome you to this edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, The Cost of Not Engaging Employees. The Strategy Driven Podcast focuses on the tools and techniques executives and managers can use to improve their organization's alignment and accountability to ultimately achieve superior results. These podcasts elaborate on the best practice and warning flag articles found on the Strategy Driven website at www.strategydriven.com. In this episode, Michael Lee Stallard, co-founder and president of E Pluribus Partners, shares with us his insights on employee engagement. In this, the first of a series of employee engagement podcasts, we explore the cost of not engaging employees, revealing why this business imperative can have as significant a return on investment as most other strategic initiatives. So, without any further delays, let's get started. We are privileged to be joined by Michael Lee Stallard, principal author of Fired Up or Burned Out, and co-founder and president of E Pluribus Partners, a consulting firm specializing in helping leaders create connection cultures to form strong bonds among the management, employees, and customers of an organization. Michael's work has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, Leader to Leader, Human Resource Executive, and Fox Business Now. He has spoken at conferences organized by the Conference Board, GE, Google, NASA, Johnson & Johnson, and Yale New Haven Hospital. Michael, welcome to the Strategy Driven Podcast.
Nathan, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
It's a real treat to have you on the show. And in fact, to let our listeners know, we'll actually be doing a whole series of podcasts on employee engagement. So I really appreciate you joining us for not just this evening, but coming back again and again so we can really explore more deeply this particular topic.
Well, you know, I'm thrilled to be here, and it's such an important time because employee engagement numbers are disengagement is growing, and it's a national problem, something we really need to devote some time to and think about how to turn this around.
Oh, absolutely. And with the economy the way it is and so many organizations having to have cutbacks, we more than ever need our employees to be fully engaged to make up for some of those folks we unfortunately had to lay off.
Right, absolutely. It's hard to spiral up out of a situation that, like we're in today unless people are engaged in aligning their behavior with organizational goals.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, to start our conversation, since this is the first of the series of podcasts, I wanted to provide a foundation for our listeners. And so I hoped you would define for us what you see or what you define as being employee engagement. And if you might describe for us what an engaged employee looks like.
Well, that's a very good place to start, number one. Engagement, of course, is based on the French word, engage, two words, which means to pledge oneself. I think that's a very succinct way to think about this topic of employee engagement. An engaged employee is one who really commits themselves to the best of the organization. They want to help the organization succeed and their peers in the organization. And when our book came out in 2007, the book is Fired Up or Burned Out, mm-hmm. How to Reignite Your Passion, Creativity, and Productivity, we, in the book, defined engagement as when employees felt connected to the organization's identity, in other words, its mission, its values, its reputation, when they felt connected to the people they worked with, and they felt connected to their day-to-day job tasks. And these connections motivated them to give their best efforts and align their behavior with organizational goals. Now, about the time that our book came out, the Concord also came out with a definition that I like. And you can see that we're very much on the same page. The Conference Board definition is employee engagement is a heightened emotional, intellectual, and intellectual connection that an employee has for his, her job, organization, manager, or coworkers that in turn influences him or her to apply additional discretionary effort to his or her work. Beautiful definition. In fact, tomorrow I'm actually leading a panel at a conference board conference in New York City where we'll get into this topic a bit. So you can see both the conference board and in our research, we focused on the powerful effect of these rational and emotional connections and how they impact the amount of effort that people put in their work and whether or not they align their behavior with organizational goals.
Okay.
Now, you also asked me, I should follow up on this. Okay. Just, what does an engaged employee look like? And it's pretty intuitive. You're going to see just a whole host of behaviors that give you clues that this particular employee is engaged. They're focused on getting the job done. They're helping their peers. They are energetic and enthusiastic. You will not see them involved in any behaviors that will undermine or certainly not intentionally undermine or discourage their peers. But they're the employees that really have such a huge positive effect on the organization's performance. That's what an engaged employee looks like in a nutshell.
Okay. All right. And Michael, you and I have decided that we would dedicate this first podcast in our series to the cost of not fully engaging employees, which to me says that we are suggesting that there's a problem that exists with employee engagement. I've seen several studies that discuss the average level of employee engagement within the workplace. Now, I do understand that every organization is a bit different, but how would you quantitatively describe the level of engagement at the average organization?
Well, as you say, Nathan, there are several studies, and instead of citing any particular study, you know, organizations like Gallup, the Corporate Leadership Council, which is part of the Corporate Executive Board, you have Towers Watson and other organizations that have done studies, Blessing White, et cetera. But if you look at these studies over, say, the last decade, they move a little bit in one direction or another, mm-hmm. but the longer-term average has been this, that 75% of employees in organizations are not engaged. Only 25% are, and of that group that are not engaged, about 15 to 20% of them are what we describe as actively disengaged, so that they are at times working against the interest of the organization. They're actually rowing in the other direction at times.
Wow.
So, the cost to organizations in terms of opportunity cost that affects productivity and innovation is immense. The former president of Gallup, there's a great quote that I use in my speaking and teaching that mm-hmm. where he says, and I just think he totally nailed it here, he said, when I look at the research, it just astounds me the huge opportunity that organizations have if they just boost employee engagement up to 50% of employees, not even up to 75%, but they just get half of the employees engaged, the impact on productivity and innovation is immense.
Sure. Those are incredible numbers. And well, the first question I think that comes to probably everybody's mind is why are so many employees not engaged or not aligned with their company's strategy?
Well, that's let me go back to the prior question for one second.
Okay.
Because I do want to add another little wrinkle that I think will help your listeners understand the cost. The studies that are out there, Gallup, the Corporate Executive Board, they have looked at the difference in productivity between the engaged employee and the average employee. They've also looked at the difference between the engaged employee and the disengaged employee. Mm-hmm. On the other end of the spectrum, the actively disengaged employee. And the numbers are somewhere around, if you look at the averages, they're about 20, that there's a 20 to 26% improvement. I would say a good number, a good rule of thumb is that there will be a 20% boost in productivity over the average employee if you can engage that average employee so that they move into the higher category. So another way to think of that is that's an additional day of productivity a week.
Yeah.
Pretty big.
Oh, that's astounding.
So, and then to answer the question you just asked, why are so many employees disengaged these days? And I would say you really have to go back to psychology. I think, you know, a lot of us think back to Maslow and others, and we've done a lot of research in that area, drawing on not only Maslow's work, but Csikszentmihalyi and DC and Ryan and others who have made some great contributions in this area. Mm-hmm. You know, almost 50 years, more than half a century after Maslow came out with this hierarchy of needs. And we boil it down in our work to that there are six universal human needs to help people thrive at work. And maybe this would be a good point just to describe some of them, because, you know, when these needs are not met, people dysfunction. That's when they become disengaged.
Sure.
And these are the needs that, when they are met, really, they help people, they energize people to want to give their best efforts and motivate them in that direction. So the needs are, the first is respect. We need to be around people who respect us. If we're around incivility or passive-aggressive, you know, people intentionally ignore us to tick us off, we can't thrive in that type of environment. So that's a really obvious need that we need to have in our work environment. The second need is recognition. In other words, we need to be affirmed for our contributions, our strengths, and that can be a task strength. So, for example, maybe we're a good interviewer like you, Nathan, or perhaps a good writer, good salesperson, good process engineer, what have you. Those are all task strengths. Or we can be affirmed in terms of our character strengths, such as perseverance or honesty or vitality, you know, or very hardworking. All of those are, there are many, many different character strengths that people can also affirm us. And that, in a sense, charges this battery that we have that I call the recognition battery. And it needs to be charged, or else we run out of gas if it's not charged.
Sure.
But if it is, we can keep going like the Energizer Bunny. The third of the six universal human needs to thrive at work is to belong. We all need a group of people who have our back in life, both in work and outside of work, and that just helps us get through the inevitable difficult times that we all face in our lifetime, you know, both in and outside of work. So that sense of belonging, that sense of being part of a team that we're really a part of helps us. And those first three needs are all relational in nature. They're all based on interactions that we have with people in our day-to-day work environment. The next two needs are task mastery needs. The first is autonomy. In other words, we need to have freedom to do our work. We can't be subject to too much red tape or bureaucracy or over-controlling individuals. I always think of Nurse Ratched from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. If you've ever seen that movie, is someone who's extremely over-controlling, and we just can't thrive in that type of environment. But if we have autonomy to do our work, and the next need is personal growth, if we're in a job that's a good fit with our strengths, our talents, and it provides the right degree of challenge, not overly challenging so that we're stressed out or under-challenging so that we're bored, but right in that sweet spot of challenge, then we experience a state that psychologists call flow or optimal experience. And
okay.
I think of it as being in a time warp. Just the hours fly by. So that's another one of the needs. And the last need, of course, is meaning. If we're working on, if we're doing work that connects with our lives in some way, that it's significant to us, we just naturally put more effort in it. And when all these needs are met, people are much more resilient to get through the difficult times that individuals and organizations face. And I would say engagement really, really pays off for organizations in times like this, when people have to pull together, they have to give their best efforts for organizations to thrive, and in some cases to survive. And those organizations that don't have employees usually they become somewhat kind of dog-eat-dog type environments where there isn't a high degree of trust or cooperation, and it's just much tougher to survive when you don't have people pulling together or pulling hard in the right direction.
Absolutely. Now, Michael, you've mentioned a number of the surveys and the research that was conducted around productivity. What's the research that supports the concept of connection?
Well, it's both the corporate executive board, the conference board, they've done research on this, as well as our own research. When you look at there's so many research studies we could cite. Mm-hmm. A good way to look at it is if you look at the employee engagement surveys, Nathan, you deconstruct them, you look at the actual questions.
Yes.
You'll see that they're asking questions about does an employee feel connected to their supervisor? Do they feel connected to the people they work with? Do they feel connected to their job? Do they feel connected, are they inspired by the organization's identity? Are they proud of the organization? So all those types of questions are measuring whether or not people, if you ask them informally in interviews, you'll see that that word connection comes up frequently. And that's, it was interesting that we came up with our definition independent of, we were not collaborating with the conference board at that time. So it was interesting that we both came up with very similar definitions looking at the underlying research, but not collaborating together on that. And then, of course, there's a lot of research in the social sciences that shows, and in the hard sciences, that shows connection affects us all of our lives. You know, the infants who feel connected to their caregivers have a mental and physical health advantage that lasts all their lives. Adults who feel connected are better problem solvers and more creative. And seniors who feel connected live longer. They're less likely to get sick. If they get sick, they recover faster, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the Corporate Executive Board research in 2004, where they studied 50,000 individuals worldwide, one of the things they pointed out was that emotional factors in the workplace, in other words, the way people feel, do they feel connected to their organization's identity, their peers, their day-to-day work tasks, that those emotional factors, those feelings, were four times as effective as rational factors when it came to the amount of discretionary effort that people put in their work. So there's so much research that supports this factor of connection and how it affects us in our lives and whether or not we thrive in our careers or outside of work for that matter.
Wow, that's impressive because I didn't realize that there was that body of research that existed. Out there.
Well, yeah, there is. And I think it's also another bit of the research that was very powerful that helped me connect the dots on this was just looking at neuroscience and connecting with neuroscientists and learning that they have now discovered there's physiological evidence that supports what happens when people feel connected. So, for example, when people feel connected, it boosts dopamine, serotonin, oxytocin. These are neurotransmitters and hormones that make us feel more energetic, more confident, less susceptible to fear and worry, and also more trusting of the people around us. Those are just a few effects, but it's also interesting that, Nathan, when we feel connected and we're in a stressful environment, it reduces stress hormones, cortisol, epinephrine, norepinephrine, actually decline when we're in a stressful environment if we feel connected to the people around us. So if we have this social support, it helps us keep our heads and make rational decisions rather than rash decisions. And because of some new technologies in medicine, we're able to look at brain activity. It's called functional magnetic resonance imaging technology, or fMRI. And when you do fMRI scans of the brain and somebody is in a state of stress, brain activity starts to move from the executive function, the frontal lobes of the brain, to the midbrain, the more primitive brain, where people are less sensitive to social nuance around them, and they're more likely to say things that are disconnecting or they tick people off around them. And, you know, I relate in that to just my own life. You know, if my teenage daughters break into my office, my home office, and I'm working, you know, I'm immersed in my work or stressed out, you know, I'm inclined to say something I may regret. So, you know, it's important for us to stay connected to people in our work environment, and it has a positive effect on our performance.
Absolutely. And I can relate to the teenage daughter.
Another thing we connect on.
Yes. So true. Now, Michael, earlier you had mentioned that by connecting and engaging employees, there is an upside of 20%+ available to be had in the area of productivity. So for executives and managers in our audience who would like to go and pursue that block of productivity, what are the necessary actions that they have to take, and what are the costs that they're going to incur when they go forward to develop a connection culture that produces and maintains that higher level of employee engagement?
Well, you know, Nathan, that's a great question. That's the beauty of this, is it really is not all that expensive. It requires some discipline and some training, but here's a good way to think of it. Number one, you need to define expectations. You need to make it clear to your managers, to the people in your organization, that this is the type of culture we want to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that, you know, several organizations like our own that provide that type of training to help people define expectations, help them understand what we're trying to achieve here. Then secondly, you need to measure and hold people accountable.
Okay.
You can do that through employee engagement surveys, which I recommend doing at least once a year, and then designing interventions. You may need coaching. You may need additional training to help people adapt those behaviors and attitudes that will create a connection culture where everyone will thrive.
Okay.
These things are not that expensive. You're not talking about huge capital expenditures. You're talking about training programs and measurements and some coaching. So it's really very affordable, and I would encourage organizations to even carve out a part of your organization and experiment with this and just see for yourself the impact that it has.
Oh, absolutely. And feedback, to my way of thinking and coaching, is a management function to begin with. So it's just a matter of directing it in that positive direction or positive way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you have to be intentional about this, because we don't naturally drift toward. Another way to think about connection is, are we being intentional about developing relationship excellence in organizations? Because because task excellence is so obvious. We have Six Sigma and metrics and benchmarking and dashboards these days and all these tools that are really focused on task excellence. But if you're not intentional about also developing relationship excellence, it will break down, I guarantee you, over time. And you know what? It'll sabotage task excellence eventually, too. And that's what's happened at NASA. It's happened at, I'm speaking at NASA, Johnson Space Center in June.
Mm-hmm.
There are many, many cases throughout history of leaders who were not intentional about developing relationship excellence or connection in the organization, and it eventually came back to bite them.
Oh, absolutely. And I think we see it all the time in companies that fail. One of the big disconnects is with the leadership team to the organization, and there's not those connections. And the leadership team, as they're failing, becomes less and less knowledgeable of really what's going on down lower in the organization.
Well, that's so true, and there are a lot of great stories about that, both positive and negative examples. One of my favorites is Andrew Grove. When he was CEO of the Intel Corporation, he was intentional about encouraging what he called helpful Cassandras, who were the people on the front lines of the business who could see how the future was developing, and he encouraged constructive confrontation. And because he did that, he created a place that was safe for people to share their opinions and ideas, especially if, there were warnings about the direction that Intel was moving in that might not be the best direction to go.
Sure.
And because of that, he had a number of people who came to, the information eventually got to him, that helped him see that they needed to focus on the microprocessor business rather than the memory business, which was their largest business at the time. They were competing against the Japanese, whose quality was so much higher than Intel's, that Intel was not going to compete reasonably in the future in that business. So Grove made the riskiest decision of his career, and probably the best decision, when he decided to refocus the corporation on microprocessors. And, of course, about 15 years later, Intel became the largest non-proprietary manufacturer of integrated chips in the world, larger than their next three competitors combined. And Grove also became Time's Man of the Year.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. And
this active, rather than being isolated, like you said, on an island, he was active out there getting opinions and ideas from employees throughout the organization.
Yeah, and that is a great business example. And I know in your book, Fired Up or Burned Out, you provide a lot of stories, and some of them touch on government, the social sector, and then sports, and how teams have created connection cultures. Would you be able to convey just another example or two from your book?
Well, sure. You know, I'll give you a choice. Do you want to hear about a rock band or a basketball team?
Oh, I'm all about the basketball, especially since we're into March Madness.
All right. Well, I'm from Chicago, even though I live in Greenwich, Connecticut. You know, outside, just north of New York City, but I'm originally from Chicago, and I am a Bulls fan.
Okay.
But let me tell you a story about Michael Jordan. Everybody knows about Michael Jordan.
Sure.
And in 1984, when the Bulls drafted Jordan, of course, he was a superstar. In fact, I think within a month of joining the NBA, Michael's picture was on the cover of Sports Illustrated magazine, and it said, "A Star is Born, Michael Jordan Lights Up the NBA," was the subtitle. And, of course, he was lighting up the NBA. He was scoring, 30, 35 points a game. But the problem was the Bulls, for the first few seasons that Jordan was there, they were not winning. They were not going, they would maybe get into the playoffs and then they would kind of die out. They just weren't living up to the expectations of the fans or Bulls management. And Doug Collins, who is a great, great coach, was really putting his heart and soul into the job, and he was pushing the Bulls to execute, drilling them over and over and over on the different plays that he had created so that they would have chief task excellence, as I say.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem was they still weren't performing up to their potential. And Bulls management made a change. They elevated Phil Jackson, who was an assistant coach on the team. And the genius of Phil Jackson was he could see that something more was required than focusing on task excellence. So he called Michael Jordan in. And he sat down with him, and he said, Michael, we're never going to be NBA champions unless you surrender the me for the we. In other words, Michael, you call your teammates your supporting cast. You don't even really know these guys. When we're on the road, you're traveling with your entourage. And unless you take the time to connect with them as human beings, to help them achieve their potential and lift the performance of the people around you, we'll never be NBA champions. You don't even trust them. At the end of the game, you're the guy who always takes the shot. And you just, it takes a team rather than a superstar to win NBA championships. And to Michael Jordan's credit, he started coming to practice early. He started spending time with his teammates off the court. He stopped calling them his supporting cast, which was a good move.
Yep.
And you saw there, it was extraordinary to see their performance pick up. And he started passing the ball at the end of the game to some of the great three-point shooters, John Paxson and Steve Kerr and B.J. Armstrong. They had some Craig Hodges. They had some great three-point shooters on that team. And the next 8 years, the Bulls won six NBA championships when they became a team. And you can see what happened. Michael Jordan, as a leader, was intentional about connecting with the rest of the team so that they didn't feel like a supporting cast, but they felt like Michael's teammates, and they became a band of brothers, and they won NBA championships.
Yeah, I even saw that when he went on to be a team member, besides a part owner, of the Washington Wizards. And he stepped out on the court again and, would coach and mentor and help his team. And it connected with those guys as well and elevated their game to a point that it had not achieved any time previous to his arrival.
Yeah, it was exciting. I think it was a life-changing experience for him because, the team also supported him. The 2 years that they didn't win the NBA championship, of course, Michael had left to play basketball, which was his father's hope for him.
Right.
And his father, James, had been murdered. And so Michael wanted to kind of live up to what his father had hoped for, and he took those years off. And the Bulls really supported him through a difficult season in his life. That emotional support really meant a lot to him. And the baseball thing didn't work out like he hoped, so he returned to winning NBA championships.
Yeah, and I remember that too.
Uh-huh.
Always a joy to watch Michael take the court.
Well, it was. And you see this pattern. I have some articles coming out in Leadership Excellence and Leader to Leader. and other magazines and over the rest of the year about Admiral Vern Clark. When he was running the Navy, he became the chief of the Navy in 2000, and he was very intentional about reaching out to the enlisted class in the Navy. And I described the various things that Admiral Clark did when he became CNO, and they saw first-term reenlistment rates soar from under 38%, which was the Navy's goal at that time, and they were underperforming that goal, and that's why Admiral Clark made winning the war on talent his number one priority. And then about within 18 months, they had gone from under 38% to approximately 56% reenlistment. And it wasn't, inside of a couple of years that the Navy had more enlisted sailors than they knew what to do with. It was extraordinary how the Navy had never seen anything like that in terms of just a surge. And this is all before 2001, before September 11th.
Sure.
Numbers bumped up higher after September 11th. But it was because Admiral Clark was intentional about connecting with the master chiefs who lead the enlisted class and the broader group of sailors who were enlisted in the Navy.
I was in the service in the late 90s, and I can remember those drop-offs of reenlistments and folks getting out of the service as well. So
Those were some tough years for the Navy, weren't they?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And they were extending sea tours and the whole nine yards just because they didn't have enough people. So,
right.
Yeah. Now, Michael, we've talked quite a bit about quantitative benefits, but you know, I know there's a lot of qualitative benefits that go around employee engagement as well. Could you tell us a little bit about these and the kind of impacts that they have on the typical organization?
Well, there are so many. You know, organizations are complex human and capital systems. But just to mention a few, connection increases, and employee engagement increases trust, it increases cooperation, it increases enthusiasm and energy, it has a positive effect on just discretionary effort of employees, it affects the strategic alignment, it affects productivity, innovation, and let me just comment on innovation because that's a really interesting area that we've done a lot of work on. When you look at engaged employees, they tend to, and engaging organizations, they tend to be open in terms of creating a marketplace of ideas, and employees are participating by sharing their opinions and ideas, sharing information with other individuals. This creates a marketplace of ideas that is just an essential element of innovation. When we study innovators, what we can see is that oftentimes they connect ideas that reside in two distinct domains. So, for example, a simple example I use is someone once took the idea of a shoe and a wheel, and they came up with a roller skate.
Sure.
That was an innovation that really came about by combining things that existed in two separate domains. So giving people the ability to see, have information that exists throughout the firm by having a very open culture and great intranet systems that capture knowledge as much as possible, that makes it possible for individuals to connect these ideas that reside around the firm and come up with new businesses, new processes, new products, etc. In other words, innovation.
Certainly. And by engaging that broader population of employees, you're leveraging all those little nuanced pieces of knowledge and information that they have that will allow you to make those kind of bridges where folks at higher levels of the organization sitting in conference rooms are not going to know those little key pieces of information, those details that they could then put together themselves.
So, that is so true. That is so true. Just the world is complex today, and I think, and you add on top of that, that the pace of change. You know, Gary Hamel, his book, The Future of Management, he's done such a great job of describing how change has accelerated so much in our era. Just the world is more complex. It's moving at a much faster pace, and it is foolish for leaders to think that they can possibly they can navigate a complex organization without the opinions and ideas of a broad group of people who have diverse experiences, diverse thinking styles, diverse temperaments. So it really, it's necessary to be intentional about creating the culture and the knowledge management tools to help create a marketplace of ideas and help to make sure decision makers are well-informed to improve their batting average when it comes to making decisions.
That is so true. So that is so true. Now, Michael, before we close, I first want to let our listeners know that they can download a free copy of your Connection Culture Manifesto that's published by ChangeThis.com. And we're going to go ahead and provide a link to that document from the Strategy Driven website in the article that's associated with this podcast. But I'd also like to mention that you have a website, and it's www.fireduporburnedout.com, where our listeners can also find just an abundance of additional resources on engaging and motivating employees. Would you mind taking a moment to tell our audience a little bit about your website and the resources they can find there?
Well, they can find, I have several websites, and the fireduporburnedout.com, of course, that's our first book website. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of articles and videos. There's also a connection to my blog that has even more articles and videos, and I'm a prolific blogger. I tend to write down my ideas and things I see, links to things I see in the press that I think are very relevant to these issues of productivity, innovation, connection, employee engagement, strategic alignment, etc. So there's a real wealth of resources in all these areas online, and I believe in giving it away as much as possible to help people. It's always come back to benefit me, so there's just a wealth of resources, and I would encourage people to take advantage of that.
Yeah, and I certainly would, too. Speaking of the videos, because I love videos, and I've thoroughly enjoyed several of the videos that I've watched that you have posted out on your websites or linked to from your websites. So I hope our listeners will.
Well, thank you. And I have some good things coming in the queue. So.
Oh, excellent.
Some good things to look forward to. Some great interviews with thought leaders whose ideas I believe will have a big impact on the century ahead.
Great. Well, I'll look forward to those as well.
Yeah, well, thank you, Nathan. It's been great being with you.
Well, Michael, I want to thank you. I appreciate your taking the time to be with us, to share your thoughts on the cost of not engaging the workers. And I'm really looking forward to continuing our discussion on employee engagement through the upcoming series of podcasts that we're going to do. So I hope our listeners will keep coming back to hear more insights. I also hope that they'll take a moment to go to your website and to learn from the articles and the videos that you've got published there on how to better motivate and engage their employees, because I know it will certainly help them to take their business to the next level and to be profitable and prosperous in even these difficult times. So thank you again for joining us.
Well, thank you, Nathan. I look forward to our future sessions.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast. I would like to personally thank Michael Lee Stallard for being with us today and sharing his insights on the cost of not engaging employees. As always, we would appreciate receiving your feedback by email at podcast@strategydriven.com. If you enjoyed the show, please consider voting for us on Podcast Alley and visiting our website at www.strategydriven.com. You can find more information about Michael Lee Stallard and his book, Fired Up or Burned Out, at www.epluribuspartners.com. Until next time, so long.